Welcome, one and all, across the Delta Quadrant and beyond, as Fantastic Geek talks Star Trek Prodigy. My name is Matt, and joining me, as always, is Pete. Hailing frequencies are open, if that's what this button does.
Hello, Matt. Hello, listeners. Talking today, Star Trek Prodigy, the pilot episodes, Lost and Found, Part 1 and 2, aired, streamed together today on Paramount Plus.
Pete, it's what Memory Alpha is calling a feature-length premiere, which is not accurate, but it is two episodes, and I'm excited to talk about this. Though, as we've been saying on our various Star Trek podcasts for a while, though this show, what with its prominent Nickelodeon balloon and all that, is not squarely aimed at middle-aged Star Trek fans, I think there's a lot here to like.
I found myself more engaged than I thought I would be going in. I think that the animation is high tech, but at the same time, lovingly rendered. I think the characters, though I could use some more of each to get to know them, obviously, that there's enough there to go on. I strangely like that they only sprinkled in bits of the Star Trek mythos. You know, you had the ship, obviously you have the name at the top of the episode. They waited till the very end of the second episode to give you hologram Captain Catherine Janeway. But they're not leaning overly heavy on the franchise, and if there was a formula to do that for the young viewers, they're hoping to turn into 55-year Star Trek viewers by the time they celebrate their 110th anniversary before First Contact Day, the real First Contact, then I think this was it.
Yeah, and I'll echo what you said regarding the animation. You know, about halfway through the episode, I just kind of, I mentally paused. Maybe I even physically hit the pause button. I don't know. But it was like this, I mean, oh, obviously there's a certain child skewing nature to the animation. But it's like, this looks really good. This is well done. This is not, you know, this is not amateurish in any way or you know, Mickey Mouse Club or something like that, where you sit and go, I get it. You like majorly outsource this and it's, you know, 18 frames a second. I'm assuming, Pete, that's pretty low. But you know, like it's kind of really choppy. Like this looks really good. I'll add to it, obviously the voice cast, Kate Mulgrew notwithstanding, is a mix of some familiar names and some less familiar. I laugh because, you know, of course, D. Bradley Baker is famous in the world of animation, and you know, he's doing all the you know, alien noises there for Murph. But I think that what my point is this, Pete, what I think really typified this voice cast was to have the rather famous Jason Mantzoukas there voicing Jankum Pog. That's your Tellarite. You know, I know Jason Mantzoukas well from Parks and Rec, Good Place, The League, even going back to then. I know his voice quite well. I think especially when he's going for the crazy, ridiculous, over-the-top stuff. Here, there's some of that in his character, but I wasn't sitting there going, that's the guy from The Good Place where he had something that I won't say on the podcast, Pete, turned into, I think it was bells or chimes or something like that. Just point being, he was the character. He was performing the character. They were all playing the characters in a way where I wasn't sitting there going, wait a minute, is that ultra bad guy who's in the not back to tank? Is that the person I will recognize as Denethor from Lord of the Rings and Pete will recognize from that show with the lady and the guy, and then John Noble
Fringe.
Played. Yeah, Fringe. There you go.
A all-time science fiction show. Yes, John Noble. Okay, as you know, the career making role of Dr. Bishop from Fringe, is if that's what you're searching for there.
I like to think that it's career making when you're in a one of the most Oscar-winning movies of all time and one that swept the Oscars. But I digress. Well, tomato.
Jimmy Simpson too. I mean, the heavies, they definitely went with you know, far more established, but you know, look up and down the IMDb page and there's a mix of both. I kept trying to place the Gwyn voice actress. Sounded very oh gosh, who did I think that it was at one point? I thought it was Carrie Coon. It's Ella Purnell, but I think, you know, very, very similar in the voice. But I was satisfied with the voice cast as well. I think Brett Gray as Dahl, you know, super likable, what you need for essentially what is a children's show, but I didn't feel it dumbed down, Matt. I felt that the action was there. I felt that the world building, even for a Star Trek show, was there in what they have to set up first. All right, so they mentioned Federation a couple minutes into the episode, but other than that, again, they did not lean heavily into this is Star Trek and this is Captain so-and-so and this is the USS Bibbidi-Bop. Like, they doled it out in a way that I think is going to pull new people in, and then, oh, all right, now they watch a Star Trek show.
If one is going to make the argument that after Discovery Season 1, Star Trek Inc. decided everything's great with Discovery, but we need to make new stuff that's more core fan-centric, for lack of a better phrase, then that would give you Picard. That would give you Strange New Worlds eventually. That would give you Pike and Spock in number one in Discovery Season 2 and Lower Decks and so on and so forth. Prodigy, I mean, yes, there's those things, and the pilot episode is suggestive of an idea, and we've been told at New York Comic Con, at the New York Comic Con panel that we watched virtually, that the same idea that they're headed towards at some point, the end of this season, the end of next season, oh, now they are in the Star Trek, right. But we're taking our time getting there. So all that is clear, but this is an episode that by and large is not really kind of bowing at the altar of Star Trek. And Pete, I'm not saying that that's a good thing or a bad thing. I like the maverick nature of Discovery as a production. I'm really looking forward to the, you know, My Friends Were Home aspect of Strange New Worlds. I think kind of largely as two polar opposites, nonetheless still in the modern television aesthetic and all that. But for this to just really be, all right, I'm getting a read on these characters, and look, you know, there's the badge. There's, you know, gorgeous, gorgeous ship, of course, but working our way into the Star Trek, it does a nice job, I think, without kind of being the, you know, with all due respect, say, to Discovery Season 1, without being like, you know, oh, and some of the top five captains are the greatest hits of Trek up to that point chronologically. You know, this was just really keeping everything at arm's length in a way that is bold, I think.
And, you know, for somebody who pays attention to this and had seen all the panels they had done, they did one at, you know, the Star Trek Day back in September. Obviously, we watched the New York Comic Con one virtually. The reveal of Rock Talk as a juvenile girl, I think, was handled really well. You know, just subverting that expectation of this big burly thing has got to be like talk like this, right? So I thought that was cute and well played, because I kept seeing that actress, Riley Olazrequi, and being like, all right, which one does she play? I mean, obviously, you know, Dee Bradley Baker does Murph because he does the burps and all the noises every time he's on the panels. And it was like, all right, which one is she? And I really enjoyed that, how they revealed that. And I think there's enough sizzle here to keep me as a longtime Trek viewer, having seen every episode of TV they've ever aired, streamed to this point, coming back. All right, who is Dahl? What is his never seen before species? Why does the Diviner want this ship now that his daughter is a reluctant passenger on it? What's going on there? What's the connection to the Federation? I mean, Matt, they gave us a Kazon in plain sight. Okay. I mean, will we read tomorrow it's an Easter egg?
Huh. Well, on the topic of aliens, you know, I had clicked on Instagram, you know, and I mentioned this before on prior Star Trek podcasts, when there's, you know, some of the, it's not exactly the ads, but you know, it recommend, Instagram recommends stuff similar to what you're following, that kind of thing, blah blah blah. So when Star Trek on P Plus comes up and Star Trek and all that, it's got the Prodigy posts, you know, I'll click on them. Oh, how long is it until I find somebody who says, you know, oh no, they're making this just for money and things like that. And there was a guy a couple days ago that said, these aliens could what was the exact wording? I should get out my phone, but something like, these aliens don't look like Star Trek. And I replied, I was like, that is literally the most un-Star Trek thing that you could say, is right? Judging a bunch of people by their looks to say, you do not belong here. And the guy actually replied, he's like, no, I mean, they're like Star Wars. It's like, still, to sit and go, hey, the giant, and I'm adding my voice here. This was not what he had said in the post, but it's like, to sit and go, oh, the giant rock Wookiee is more a Star Wars than Star Trek. Like, you're doing the thing where the one side of the face is black and the other one is white, and you're saying who can come in and who can't. Like, it's a computer animated Star Trek show that takes place in a sliver, I'll assume, of the Delta Quadrant that was not heavily traveled by Voyager. So you get to have some Kazon. You also get to have some of the rock people and an errant Medusan and a thing and on and on. You get to have completely different aliens. You know, Pete, like, there's all those classic Trek episodes where they'd be like, hey, we got a white guy. We're going to call him Alien now. That's it.
Right.
No, not even any makeup. And then one day somebody took a rug and poured rubber on top of it and said, crawl onto there, buddy. You're a mama who's protecting her eggs. Like, that was not Star Trek either until Guy with Rug became one of the greatest classic Trek villains, anti-heroes, heroines, heroes, etc. Of the whole thing.
They're right to go at it from this direction of putting together an alien crew, finding a Starfleet vessel that Janeway will initiate, indoctrinate, what have you, them in the ideals of the Federation, and then we know what eventually will have to happen, that they will somehow become members of Starfleet, if it's not, you know, all right, turn the ship over and, you know, we'll give you some kind of status, you'll become a bunch of Wesleys on the crew, or, you know, we do the academy route or whatnot. But it's cute. It's better than I anticipated it would be. It's action heavy. You understand that. They're building a mythos within the show, obviously, with the questions that will span multiple episodes about our, you know, core characters. Okay, what is, you know, Dahl's situation? What is up with Gwyn, with Zero, you know, fugitive Zero, what's going on there? Why is the Diviner after him? And I think it's intriguing. And I think, you know, you could watch it week to week of, all right, what kind of trouble are they going to get into on this ship they don't know much about? And at the same time, follow those deeper mysteries.
You figure what, in in 8 weeks' time, you'll be able to binge all the rest of the episodes at, you know, in in roughly the neighborhood of a movie, despite this being called feature length. Two episodes of Next Generation is feature length. Two 22-minute episodes is not feature length. Right. But I digress. I mean, yeah, like, Pete, for me, the Star Trek animation bubble or line is this. I remember when Classic Trek came, when the animated series came to Netflix and some of the episodes I was seeing for the first time. Yeah, the greatest hits there are heavy hitters indeed. You know, Yesteryear, obviously top of them. There's a certain point I remember where I'm watching these episodes for the first time and it's like, yeah, I need to go, you know, whatever, go put more toilet paper in the bathroom. So I'm just going to bring the phone along and kind of like listen as I do that because you don't need my full attention. I'm not saying that this show is worthy of less than full attention, but I guess what I'm saying is if some of these episodes I consume while doing something else, okay, I'll be having a really nice time doing that. If I'm sitting there at the edge of my seat as we get to the end of the season and seeing, oh man, Pete, they finally got the Universal Translator to work for Murph. What's he going to say? Bring it on as well.
Yeah. And like I said, I think it's light. It moves at a clip. I think that wherever you are on the age spectrum, that you will find it in some way exciting. So I think they're making it's a calculated decision. You know, those people who have watched Star Trek for 55 years, they're getting on. And you got to replenish the base if you haven't joined from Discovery, or I can't imagine Picard was an entry point for a lot of people, but hey, it happens.
I think that if you were a Discovery holdout because some of the people in Discovery made you affrightened,
frightened.
Picard may have been Picard. I bet you if we had All Access / Paramount Plus data, I think that we would go, oh, that's more of a new bump than I would have thought. And that's kind of the beauty of it.
Yeah. And remembering too that, you know, abroad, the Netflix and everything, I don't know how that impacts Prodigy. I mean, is that part of the Nickelodeon thing? Are they airing that abroad on Nick first? I don't know. But like I said, this is the strategy to take. It's an effortless show to watch.
I have an answer to your question, by the way, Pete. Here's what it is. And this is part of the, frankly, this is part of the wisdom of, you know, it took a long time for CBS All Access to go from who wants to have 24-hour camera access to the Big Brother house, to go from that to a grown-up streamer, whether it's Good Fight or Discovery. Here's the answer. Star Trek Prodigy will be on the menu when Paramount Plus expands to Europe in 2022. So there's what it is. I don't know what the European Nickelodeon relationship is, but it's the answer for this show is bypassing terrestrial entirely, bypassing cable and so forth. You want to watch this with your kiddos in, you know, Paris, sign up for, you know, La Mantaine Plus or whatever they're going to call it in French.
I mean, we've seen it's all about the catalog, right? And if it's not the stuff you develop, it's the stuff that you pluck from elsewhere, you know. So Seinfeld goes from a Hulu to a Netflix. Then Friends gets yanked from Netflix to, you know, the own house of Peacock. Same with The Office. And then, so it was news yesterday or today that South Park, which is at obviously, you know, broadcast over Comedy Central, but on HBO Max is now going to have episodes on Paramount Plus. So it's about where they can get you to go, and you know, that value added. You know, we've been pretty upfront that we only subscribe to Paramount Plus when Star Trek is streaming new episodes. And I think that other than a Netflix, and I think Disney Plus increasingly for people, like, well, that's the thing you keep. For me too, it's Hulu. I think they offer an awful lot. Then you pick and choose, all right, this one's in season, this one's off the menu, to use, you know, your metaphor before. And, you know, as Star Trek continues to grow here, all right, now the fourth show, Strange New Worlds, going to be the fifth on the CBS All Access / Paramount Plus offering, that they're creating the reason for people to have it year round, or, you know, not drop those subscriptions. I mean, we're going to have, in 2.5 weeks' time, we're going to have two concurrent Star Trek shows for the first time this century.
Well, and let me add to that your point of this goal that the Star Trek fan does not cancel Paramount Plus, you know, because there's Star Trek content all the time. We know Discovery is going until February 10th. That is assuming a 13-episode season, which I don't think has been confirmed, but I think is the assumption. We know that Picard is going to start up February 2022 as well, so that's probably the 17th or 24th. Let's assume, for the sake of argument, that there's no break between Discovery and Picard. That would then put Picard's end somewhere, I believe, in the first half of April. I have to imagine, Pete, at that point, whether it's 1 week or two or four or six, you're going to pretty quickly after Picard get Strange New Worlds, which is going to run 10 episodes. So let's just say, for the sake of argument, keep the math real clean here, that gets us May and June. Gee whiz, Pete, the calendar turns to July and we go, all right, is it? Oh, look, Pete, there's one short trek in the middle of July, I'm imagining. And then look, now it's the middle of August again, Lower Deck season 3. Like, they're that close away. They're literally a short trek away from going, is it worth canceling this thing for 3 weeks? Not if there's, you know, if there's a this, that, the other. So the future is now when it comes to perpetual Star Trek all the time.
Yeah, and I think we both welcome it. It's a situation where you have the fallow periods that, all right, yes, they just moved the original series back to Paramount Plus off Netflix, but oddly, like Next Gen and Deep Space Nine and a whole bunch of others are still on Netflix. It might be a, all right, these are going to expire at different dates type of thing, and rights revert back. But yeah, we completely be for that. It's not like we don't want to subscribe and get Star Trek. But when you talk about the big boys, and, you know, for me, I think in terms of what we do, obviously Disney Plus with the Marvel stuff and the Star Wars stuff, and creating those buzzed about events in terms of the streaming offerings. I mean, listen, Prodigy's made some kind of dent here. Let's hope that it's the desired effect, and that, you know, young people are suddenly walking around with a Star Trek t-shirt on that, you know, wasn't bought for them by an aunt or an uncle or a mom or a dad. And, you know, you get that buzz from it, to the point where a couple of years down the road, you know, all right, somebody's bringing up Rock Talk, like, I don't know, you would in Ahsoka Tano or something like that.
Yeah, it's a bright future. And I think it's worth remembering too, I don't know for whom the Paramount Plus debut of Prodigy exists. Mm-hmm. It's possible that Nobody does. It's possible this is just an experiment. Let's not forget. And again, Pete, I will make some inferences here. I'm not basing this on any data or articles or whatnot. Let's say, for the sake of argument, this was paid for by the Nickelodeon account. Okay, fine. Well, that means it's free for Paramount Plus, or other way around. Let's say Paramount Plus now is paid for it, or it's 50-50, whatever it is. They're spreading the value out. They're extending the value out. If this is just an experiment to go, okay, Pete, who watches Lower Decks, Classic Trek, CSI reruns, and spooky episodes of Evil, now that they've made their way to Paramount, okay, that's a certain adult-skewing viewer. Okay, he's a certain level of interest here for Prodigy. Oh, wait, another account that watches, Paw Patrol and SpongeBob is watching this. Like, this is an opportunity to get info on your audience in a really compelling way. And then you get to put it on Nickelodeon and then sell all the ads and kind of get all the best of both worlds from there. I guess, Pete, what I'm trying to say is this. Paramount Plus is not the last place streamer that it used to be. The tear goes down my cheek. It's growing on up, Pete. It's learning. It's learning. It's
learning. Credit where credit is due. It is. I mean, listen, we have championed their content since September of 2017. We have. Go back and listen to every episode we've podcast of Star Trek Discovery, of Picard, of Short Treks, of Lower Decks. And now to have this, we have made the decision, as things are going to get very, very busy for us on the live action end in the next couple months, that we are not going to do Prodigy week to week. That's not, again, even after having seen it now, that's not because not interested. I will be continuing to watch. I'd be presumptuous of Matt here that he will continue to watch. But obviously, we're going to be doing Discovery. We're going to be doing Hawkeye. We're going to be doing the Book of Boba Fett. And it's going to be hectic on that end. But I think, much like we talked a little bit of Why the Last Man for patrons, and we're going to actually be doing that over our regular air on the Pop Culture Podcast this upcoming week, as their season possible series finale airs, and we're really hoping that's not the case. I think we'll be talking Star Trek Prodigy again soon.
Absolutely. And Pete, you did reference the Patreon there, so an opportunity for us to thank all of those who support us on patreon.com/fantasticgeek, keeping us listener supported. Pete, they are our own crew of the USS Protostar, and we are proud to have them along.
Yes, and every chance we get, we're looking to put things on Patreon for the people that power our dilithium chambers, be it an exclusive look at Dune, nearly 90 minutes of discussion of Dune Part 1 with Part 2 to come now announced, all sorts of things for you to check out there. You determine the value you place on our content. Takes just $1 a month to get you past that door. And then after that, you pick all sorts of levels. But you help us do this thing. And for that, we are tremendously grateful. Can't contribute this month? Please get yourself over to Apple Podcasts. Leave us a rating in seconds. You have no idea how much a rating just out of stars helps spread the word through the analytics, through the algorithm for our 24 podcast feeds, Matt. We're going to hit that quarter of a century mark in December. It's amazing.
Well, Pete, for all those kids of the 2260s, you're a kid of the 2260s if your communicator has the flip option. Pete, if they want to hail you, how can they be in touch with you on Twitter?
Hail, yeah. Get yourself over to Twitter. You'll find me at Peter, P-I-E-T-E-R-J, Ketelaar, K-E-T-E-L-A-A-R, 12,111 followers. Can't be wrong.
And while I'm personally on Twitter is looking back lost, do me in touch with the podcast, comment on FantasticGeek.com. Check us out on Twitter, Instagram, Gmail, where we are Fantastic Geek as well. But wait, Peter, there's more.
Facebook.com/FantasticGeek, all one word with the P and the H. Like it today.
Well, for those listening for Star Trek content, we will be previewing Discovery Season 4. Pete, the show they said wasn't going to make it. We'll be previewing that in the coming days. And of course, our weekly podcast for that returning. If you're here for any of the other geeky stuff we do, Pete, this month, this month that is ahead, the month of November, about to turn the calendar there, you know, we'll be talking Shang-Chi, Boba Fett, Discovery, Hawkeye, and on and on. So lots of great stuff there. With that,
gonna get busy, as I said before.
Absolutely. With that, I will say adios to all our listeners and give you, Pete, the final word.
Hey, Crater Face, I wasn't done talking.